society, there is a paedophiliac, I'm so sorry, I can't pronounce it. There is this paedophiliac element which crosses hidden, it's submerged, but it is part of our society. And that is some of these people who are in the files, these Silicon Valley tech bros, it's their companies which are facilitating that in so many ways. A quarter of the traffic across the internet, you know, a quarter of all searches are for porn. The most popular numerous search terms are for teens, for barely legal content. We don't see that. It's not on the open web that we see, but it is, of course, absolutely there. And I think we have this understandable reluctance and resistance to recognize this current in our culture. And for me, Epstein should be the reckoning where we are looking at this, where we're forced to look at this. And instead, we see this veil of silence, and I think that's really profoundly disturbing. And I think that the US press is not stepping up to the moment. It's not serving its readers and its viewers, and I think that has huge consequences.
I mean, Carol, that's an extraordinary and perhaps not very well known statistic that you just cited, namely that, as you write in your piece, most tech platforms derive a huge percentage of their profits from sexual interest in children. Porn represents 25% of all internet searches, and according to Pornhub, teen is the most searched for term. So if you can talk about that, how is it that tech platforms make a profit from the searches of sexual interest in children, and whether you think this Epstein scandal will do anything to change the public discourse about the sexual abuse of teens, including what regulations may be put in place on these tech platforms that enable this?
I mean, I think sexual interest in teens and access to that material is grown exponentially because of the internet. There is, you know, we know that there's the amount of sexual content increases every single day. But it's more than that, because what we know is that recommender algorithms and systems connect people to this material. So what might have been a fleeting interest becomes up, you know, next up in people's feeds. We know that AIs, large language models, are being fed on this content across the internet. That is being baked into the future. We know because it was being reported from internal documents in Instagram, that its recommender system actually connects paedophiles to teenagers. So we sort of draw this veil of respectability over it. We don't like to think about it. It's not there in the Google searches that is kind of, you know, it's not coming up necessarily. I mean, what I found one of the most helpful things about Twitter under Elon Musk is that he has made this stuff visible. There is sort of disgusting content out there, and that's why people, you know, left that platform. But that's, again, it's not an engagement. And to go to the, like, oh, is there going to be a reckoning? There is not going to be a reckoning in a culture and a society, which is now America, in which there is a cowardice. I think you have to say that about the way that this story is being treated in America. There is just not this seriousness being brought to it. And that, I think, is both in the geopolitical consequences of what these documents show. We can see these very, very clear connections between, for example, Russian state officials and Silicon Valley. Like, that is there now, and Epstein is a conduit in that. So we're not seeing the geopolitical consequences. But also, you know, I've just been, you know, I've been really thinking about it. There has been some excellent journalism, as ever, by journalists and journalistic teams. And I'm sure that they will be doing more. There will be deep dives. And I'm really glad and pleased for that. But I look at the front page of the New York Times today. I look at the front page of the Washington Post today. And there is nothing that spells this story out and its importance. And I feel that is a sort of, there's a, it's a lack of an understanding, it feels to me, of what journalism and news media should be about in an element of moral leadership in very, very troubled times. And, you know, in the middle of this story last week, we saw this absolutely devastating and disgusting, frankly, sacking of 300 journalists at the Washington Post. And as much as that, you know, it's another devastating blow against the press in the US. And for that to happen, I felt, in the middle of this particular news cycle is, you know, it's devastating in itself. It's also a symbol of what is happening. And I, you know, I say this as a foreigner sitting in London, and I know it's very different for people, for US citizens inside the country. But what is happening to your country is so alarming, but yet it is being normalized by its treatment in the across the media. And I think that, you know, it's why independent outlets like yourself and, you know, as we can see across the ecosystem, these new insurgent outlets, of which the thing that I've set up in the UK, The Nerve, is part of, are increasingly important. Because we're not massive corporate entities with massive corporate interests who can, I think, be sat on or intimidated by power in the same way. And so, yeah, I find it extraordinary that that the press is so cowed in this moment.
Thank you so much, Carol. Carol Cadwalader, award-winning investigative journalist whose Substack is How to Survive the Brolicarchy. She gained international recognition for her expose on the Facebook Cambridge Analytica data scandal in 2018. Her most recent piece is headlined, We All Live in Jeffrey Epstein's World. She's also the co-founder of an independent news outlet called The Nerve, launched with five other former Guardian journalists. Coming up, we'll speak to Democratic Congress member Joaquin Castro and a ProPublica reporter who managed to get inside a detention center in Dilley, Texas, to talk with children being held there. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river, and the whole world sings. Sing it like a song. The whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up, but I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow.
By Linda Segarra of Hooray for the Riff Raff, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio on Monday, February 23rd. Hooray for the Riff Raff will be performing as part of Democracy Now!'s 30th anniversary celebration at the historic Riverside Church in New York. Other guests will include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, the Nobel Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, the jazz legend Wynton Marsalis, and more. See democracynow.org for information and tickets. The tickets are going fast.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. Democrats have reportedly begun tentative negotiations with the White House just days before funding for the Department of Homeland Security is set to expire on Saturday, threatening with another partial government shutdown. Democrat lawmakers are calling for reforms on federal immigration enforcement as part of a deal to negotiate more funding for DHS. Among their demands are requiring federal immigration agents have judicial warrants when carrying out raids, an end to racial profiling, and new guidelines for use of force. Though many progressives have argued this falls short, demanding agencies like ICE be dismantled or abolished. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries said in a statement late Monday, Republicans shared an outline of counterproposals that, quote, included neither details nor legislative text. The initial GOP response is both incomplete and insufficient in terms of addressing the concerns Americans have about ICE's lawless conduct. The negotiations came in the wake of the fatal shootings of Renee Good and Alex Preti, killed just weeks apart in January by federal immigration agents in Minneapolis. Last week, President Trump signed the consolidated funding bill hours after it passed the House, ending a partial government shutdown. The legislation included only a two-week extension of funding for DHS.
This all comes as the heads of ICE, Todd Lyons, Customs and Border Protection, Rodney Scott, and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Joseph Edlow, are set to testify before the House Homeland Security Committee today. For more, we go to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Congressmember Joaquin Castro, Democratic representative from Texas, whose district includes San Antonio. Congressmember Castro recently visited ICE South Texas jail in Dilley, where he met with 5-year-old Liam Ramos and his dad, Adrian. He helped free Liam and his father from Dilley, escorting them back home to Minneapolis. Congressmember Castro, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can talk about your experiences in Dilley, the number of children, it's shocking, and hearing families yelling libertad, libertad, liberty from the jail, and how that relates to the upcoming vote. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security will, what, not run out of funds, because they have an enormous amount of funds, but you have to vote on whether or not to continue their budget.
Well, I was in Dilley in late January and then back again to help release Liam Ramos and his dad. And the best way I would describe the Dilley facility is that it's a kind of trailer prison. There are 1,100 people there. None of them have committed any crime because you're not sent to Dilley if you've committed a crime. And they're in 12-person rooms, multiple families, up to 12 people in a single room. There's cameras everywhere. Their movements are controlled. It's like prison where when you come in, you leave your belongings. They're inventoried. When you walk out, as when I walked out with Liam, they give you all your stuff back. And what I saw with Liam was what I saw with a lot of the kids. They've been traumatized by the experience. He wasn't eating very well. He was sleeping a lot. He was despondent, missing home, missing his mom. That's the case not only for him, but for a lot of the kids that are there. And I think the most shocking thing to me going through there was when I asked one of the folks who worked there what the youngest person there was. And he told me eventually that it was a 2-month-old baby who was in basically that trailer prison. And so, you know, we asked people also, we were trying to get a sense for, well, how do these people end up here? We asked them how many were seeking asylum, how many had court cases, how many had used the CBP One app, which was supposed to be an orderly and efficient way to apply for asylum and then come into the United States rather than rushing the border. And there were a big chunk of people who had used that app, for example. And so you have a lot of people who did things the right way and now are shell-shocked to find themselves in a trailer prison in rural Texas and on the verge of being deported, even though they followed the government's advice for how they should apply for asylum and come into the United States.
Congressmember Castro, if you could talk about, first of all, how Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott has been collaborating with Trump in these efforts. And you've called, in fact, for ICE to be disbanded and have also joined demands for a Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to be impeached. So if you could talk about that.
There really is no separation at this point between Governor Abbott in Texas and Donald Trump and the federal ICE. The reason I say that is because for the first time in Texas's history, Greg Abbott has embedded, has deployed the Texas National Guard into detention centers, including into Dilley, where kids are imprisoned. And so he's having the Texas National Guard do back office functions related to deportation. So what that has done is freed up more ICE officers to go into the streets of Minneapolis, to go to Chicago, to go to Los Angeles, to go even into San Antonio, where ICE agents just a few days ago basically barged into a home without presenting any warrant at all and without explaining what they were there for. And so Governor Abbott is a supporter of this. He's enabled it, and he should be asked about that. And with respect to the budget, I guess folks have to understand that in the quote-unquote big, beautiful bill not too long ago, the Department of Homeland Security got $150 billion extra dollars above and beyond their annual budget. ICE by itself got $75 billion extra money. Yeah, so nobody wants a government shutdown, even for a single agency, because if there was a shutdown, it would only be the Department of Homeland Security. But money is not an issue for them. They've got plenty of money well beyond their annual budget. So I hope that Republicans will agree to what I would consider, and I think most Americans consider, basic safeguards that help protect constitutional rights and human rights of Americans. But right now, Republicans, the only thing that they're willing to do is to follow Donald Trump. And they're stubbornly refusing at this point to do anything else.
Congressmember Castro, there are also Democrats who join with the Republicans. So what do you say to your fellow Democrats? And also, as we talk about Liam Ramos and his family, you've said the Trump administration's filed for the expedited deportation of Liam and his family. People might have thought this family, you know, the situation is done. They're together again in Minneapolis. DHS said on Friday it's seeking a deportation order for Liam. They have a pending asylum case. If you can address both Democrats in Congress and then the family.
Well, to my Democratic colleagues, I would ask folks to consider first visiting these detention centers, which are actually prisons. I went to another one in Pearsall, Texas, called the South Texas ICE Processing Center, which is adults only. But if you go in there, it is a prison. And again, the vast majority of people have committed no crime at all. And are sitting in this prison. But most of all, I would ask them to consider what's going on in the streets. Talk to the families that have been affected, the individuals that have been affected by really what has been a lawlessness by ICE, going into homes with no warrant, going into businesses with no warrant, roughing people up in the streets, obviously killing two Americans. And I think, you know, we can't act like it's business as usual and continue funding them with their annual budget when they're operating beyond the law. With respect to Liam's case, you know, Donald Trump has this obsession or this grudge against certain things. In Georgia, for example, he continues to look for the ballots that he believes cost him the election in 2020. In the case of Kilmer Obrego Garcia, he keeps trying to deport this man again, even though Kilmer's back in the United States and hasn't committed, you know, any other violations. And it looks to be the same thing with Liam Ramos, is even though you've got a five-year-old kid who's already been deeply traumatized by this experience of imprisonment, he's going after him again and picking on him in the same way that he bullies other people. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing now. I'm glad that the judge a few days ago granted a continuance to the family to make their asylum claim. And I hope that ultimately they'll be able to stay in the United States.
And before we go, Congressmember Castro, we wanted to get your response to the latest news about Jeffrey Epstein, the late convicted sex offender. If you could respond to the latest news, Ghislaine Maxwell pleading the fifth during House Oversight Committee hearings yesterday, and where you think this is going to go.
Well, I saw the news yesterday that Ghislaine Maxwell pleaded the fifth, and the Fifth Amendment is an important constitutional right. At the same time, the evidence seems to be overwhelming that she and so many others, elite members of society from government, business, academia, and other industries, were essentially operating beyond the law and abusing young children. And I don't mean to be glib by this reference, but movies at this point is the only way that I can describe what we're reading and seeing. This really seems to be some kind of cross between Eyes Wide Shut and the movie Hostel. And the reason I say that is because there are references to torture, to the mass purchase of sulfuric acid. It's clear that there was what appears to me some kind of evil club of people who were invited to participate in this ugly debauchery. And ultimately, I will say this, I hope that it happens now. I'm glad that there are 3 million documents that have been released. Everything should be released except for the victims' names. I believe that all the other names of people involved should be released, should be unredacted, whether they're Republican or Democrat, whatever their income or their station in life. If they did something wrong based on what we see in those files, they should be held accountable. So whether it's now or when Democrats take over the House, I believe next January, there has to be a rigorous and serious effort to hold people accountable for their actions. Subpoenas, bringing people in, making sure that folks are held accountable for what they did.
Representative Joaquin Castro, thank you so much for joining us, Democratic Congressmember from Texas. When we come back, we look at ProPublica's new investigation, The Children of Dilley, and hear the voices of two children being held there. Back in 30 seconds.
Oh, and tell me what's a man with a rifle in his hand gonna do for a world that's so sick and sad? And tell me what's a man with a rifle in his hand gonna do for a world that's all gone mad? He's gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river, and cover me up with the leaves of September like an old sad song. You heard it all before. Well, Delia's gone, but I'm settling the score. Ooh. Ooh.
That's Body Electric by Alinda Segarra of Hooray for the Riff Raff, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. And again, to see them and Michael Stipe and Wynton Marsalis and Angela Davis and Naomi Klein at the 30th anniversary event celebrating Democracy Now! On February 23rd, go to democracynow.org.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. The Children of Dilley, that's the title of a new ProPublica investigation into the South Texas Family Residential Center, a sprawling ICE detention complex in the town of Dilley, a few dozen miles from the southern border with Mexico. It's run by the private prison company Core Civic. Dilley was first opened by the Obama administration in 2014. In a moment, we'll be joined by a ProPublica investigative reporter who went inside Dilley. But first, we turn to the voices of two children held inside. This is a 9-year-old girl from Venezuela, Suzette Fernandez, speaking to ProPublica, describing what life is like for her at Dilley, where she's been held for over 50 days.
Honestly, I don't feel good because there's always an officer around, like bothering me. I can't go anywhere, and if I need to go to the bathroom, they won't let me because I have to go with my mom. So it's annoying, and I just have to stay in my room.
And this is 14-year-old Ariana Velasquez reading a letter she wrote while detained at Dilley. She's a high school student from Honduras who's lived in the United States with her mom for 7 years.
Hello, my name is Ariana V. I'm 14 years old and I'm from Honduras. I've been detained for 45 days and I have never felt so much fear to go to a place as I feel here. Every time I remind myself that once I go back to Honduras, a lot of dangerous things could happen to my mom and I. My younger siblings haven't been able to see their mom in more than a month. They're very young and you need both of your parents when you're growing up. Since I got to this center, all you will feel is sadness and mostly depression.
Those were the words of Ariana Velasquez, a 14-year-old girl from Honduras detained at Dili. We're joined now by ProPublica investigative reporter Micah Rosenberg. Welcome to Democracy Now, Micah. Tell us more about Ariana's story and the children detained at Dili whom you spoke to.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I think one of the main takeaways here is that children who are at this center, in the past, the center had mainly been used to hold families who were recently crossing the border, many who, since the Obama administration, it's been open and families were coming there in the hopes of coming into the United States for the first time. But now there's been a real shift because border crossings have dropped to record lows. And many of the children who are now being sent there are being arrested by ICE around the country. And some of them, like Ariana, have been living here for years. You know, they speak perfect English, as you heard. They were detained sometimes in the middle of their school years. And in some cases, they're now entrenched American lives. In the case of Ariana, she has two younger U.S. citizen brothers and brother and sister, a kindergartner and a toddler, who were not sent to the detention center. So she and her mother were separated from them.
Can you talk, Micah, about CoreCivic running Dili and talk about who is profiting financially from the locking up of children?
Well, the operator of this facility is CoreCivic, as you mentioned. It's a private prison firm that has operated ICE detention centers for many, many years. The other major private prison firm is Geo Group. And there's also other firms that run ICE detention centers. And so these are sort of longstanding companies that have worked in coordination with ICE. They say that they're subject to a number of audits and oversight, that they take health and safety as a top priority. But now there's, because of the huge amount of money that's being injected into ICE and especially into detention, these companies are set to earn more money as they expand. And there's other companies that are interested in sort of getting in the detention game. We've written about tent companies to build tent camps. They're also talking about taking over warehouses and converting those into detention facilities. And so there's a lot of companies that are sort of waiting in the wings to make more money.
Well, Micah, you've written another piece titled investigative piece. ICE sent 600 immigrant kids to detention in federal shelters this year. It's a new record. Are you referring to 2026? And if so, if you could elaborate on that, we just have a minute.
Yes, that was a separate piece that we wrote last year. And this is sort of a separate thing that's happening where, in addition to this family detention center where parents and children are held together, there's federal shelters where kids who are unaccompanied are housed. And so what we found is that ICE arrests inside the United States, in some cases, are separating children from their parents, and those kids are being sent alone to this network of shelters, where before also usually only housed border crossers, are now housing kids who have lived in the United States for many years.
Micah Rosenberg, thank you so much for joining us, investigative reporter at ProPublica. We'll link to your new piece, The Children of Dili. And again, on Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church in New York. Guests include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, Mossab Abu-Toha, V, Hooray for the Riff Raff, and more. See democracynow.org for more information. We look forward to seeing you all there. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, Le Chablis.
Hey, are you okay? It's okay not to be okay. That's why Kids Help Phone is available 24/7, 365 days a year, across Canada. so you don't have to deal with your feelings alone. You can text with a trained volunteer crisis responder or call a professional counselor, whatever works best for you. You can also connect with Kids Help Phone through trained interpreters in over 100 languages, and it's always free. Visit kidshelpphone.ca for more info and give your feelings a place to go. CJ.